6 minutes after the hour. Good to have you with us here on the Around the House program. Hope you had a good Easter and Passover season at your house. I was off last week. We ran a best of show, which gives me a day off once in a while. Went back to Massachusetts and had fried clams and lobster rolls. I hate to say that. Lobster rolls, Chris, are like almost $30, but they are so good. Oh, boy. Fried clams are 25-ish, but it's worth it. It's worth it when you haven't been there in a while. Anyway, good to be back in the Rocky Mountains, except it was 80-something this week in Massachusetts and snow here. And it's so funny, I do a promo every week, but I cut the promo and send it to Chris on Sundays. So I don't know what's going to happen, you know, later in the week. So I did the promo for this week. It's about sprinkler systems. And, of course, we get a couple inches of snow. But we can still talk about sprinkling and lawns and aeration and fertilizing and all that stuff. But sprinkler systems, of course, it's nice to get the lawns love melting snow because it's so slow. It soaks in and gets those roots nice and moisturized, if that's the right term, I guess. And that way the lawn gets off to a good start. Time to fertilize, though, right now. If you haven't done it, I would get the fertilizer on this week for sure. So good to have you with us. Our phone number is 719-473-1240, 1240. And we'd love to hear from you if you want to check in with us, whatever's going on around your house. We have a guest in the 2 o'clock hour, a friend of mine, a realtor. And she's her name is Terry Naber. I've known her for a long, long time. But I want to get her on because she's, over the years, devised ways to spiff up houses, to do a little TLC, a little mini redecorating and clean up. You know, you have a tired, older house. She's got some clever ways to do that, particularly when it comes to cabinets and woodwork and hardwood floors. I want to talk about that because it'd be really handy around you. Even if you're not selling your house, if you want to spiff your house up and not spend a lot of money, it's a thing that a lot of realtors are good at, how to make a tired house seem less tired. We'll talk about that in the 2 o'clock hour. In the meantime, here's I don't know who sent this to me, but this is called Words of Wisdom 2023. Here we go. There's 10 or 12 of these that are kind of cute. The biggest joke on mankind is that computers have begun asking humans to prove they aren't a robot. How about that? When a kid says, "Daddy, I want mommy," that's the kid's version of, "I'd like to speak to your supervisor. Just once, I want a username and password prompt to say, close enough." Yeah, amen for that. "If I'm ever on life support," and this is interesting, "if I'm ever on life support, unplug me for 1 minute, then plug me back in to see if that works." Like your modem, right? Did you ever wake up in the morning and look in the mirror and think, "That can't be accurate"? Go back to bed, right? "Last night, the internet stopped working for a couple hours, so I had to spend time with my family. They seem like really nice people." "If Adam and Eve were Cajuns," this is a good one. "If Adam and Eve were Cajuns, they would have eaten the snake instead of the apple and saved us all a lot of trouble." "You know you're getting old when friends with benefits means having someone who can drive at night." Let's see. "Here's my weight loss goal, to be able to, my New Year's resolution, to be able to clip my toenails and breathe at the same time." Here's one a little edgy, but I like this. "After watching how some people wear their masks, I understand why contraception fails a lot. Some of my friends exercise every day. Meanwhile, I'm watching a show I don't like because the remote fell on the floor." For those of you who don't want Alexa or Siri listening in on your conversation, they're making a male version. It doesn't listen to anything. Let's see, a couple more. "I just got a present labeled from Mom and Dad, and I know damn well that Dad has no idea what's inside." And finally, this one is, I'm glad they left it to last, because this is a visual one I think you'll like. "Now that I've lived through a plague, I totally understand why Italian Renaissance paintings are full of fat people lying on sofas." Isn't that good? Anyway, so that's 2020 version, 23 version of Words of Wisdom. 719-473-1240 is our telephone number if you have anything on your mind. Oh, and live email. Where's my, yeah, there it is right there. Live email at aroundthehouse.com. The website, second button from the left, if you want to check in with us via email, aroundthehouse.com. And I'll see it right here in the studio. Obviously, emails backed up because of my absence. A couple we or got a, had a week off last week. So here's a, here's one from Susan. I saw this device on TV that's supposed to prevent scaling. I'd rather not install a regular water softener. What do you think? Well, I've seen this. It's a gizmo, as my dad would say. It comes under the category of non-chemical water conditioning. These devices use different technology, electronic, ultrasonic, or electromagnetic fields to supposedly descale your incoming water. I'm making quote marks in the air with my fingers. But if you think about it, the water molecules in your pipes are zipping by the contact point for the gizmo at about 30, 40 miles an hour. So why would any weak field affect them in any significant way? And the answer is it can't. These devices never seem to hold up any under any rigorous scientific analysis. Bottom line, save your money for that traditional water softener. I'm not sure why you don't want one. Water softeners, it's kind of like having another animal or a dog or a cat. You got to kind of baby them and put some salt in and kind of keep your eye on the water softener. But if you have hard water at your house, you'll know the benefits in no time because of just how clean things will be. The dishes in your dishwasher, your hair, your skin will feel better. You won't have all that scaling around your plumbing fixtures. So I would, a lot of people want change for change's sake. Oh, that's old-fashioned. But sometimes the old-fashioned ways are the best because physics and chemistry are what they are, and the chemical ion exchange way to soften water is really the tried and true way. And there are different versions of that, chlorine and bromine and things, but a regular water softener is really the way to go if you have hard scaly water. Leslie also has a softener question. It's funny, these came in, not totally together, but I put them together because this is a kind of a water softener salt question. You know, you get salt at the grocery store, or the PX, wherever you shop, and put it in. And there's a water softener exchange that goes on in the middle of the night, usually at 1 or 2 or 3 in the morning, where the salt ions are exchanged for the calcium and magnesium ions, which takes out the hardness and makes your water soft. And that exchange produces a brine, a really salty liquid that has to go somewhere. It's full of the salt of magnesium and calcium ions, and so it has to be discharged someplace. And this is a Leslie wants to know about being in a rural area. Don't want to dump it outside in my septic tank, but don't want to dump it outside. And what else can I do? Can I use something else? Well, you really shouldn't. There's a little controversy about this, but the septic tank guys that I trust say don't run the salty brine from your water softener into the septic tank because salt acts as a kind of an antibacterial thing, a preservative, and tends to kill off bacteria. And there are friendly bacteria in your septic tank that do all the processing of the sewage you send in there, and you want to make sure that they're okay and they're not impacted by any kind of disinfectant or any kind of chemicals that would harm the bacteria, and salt might do that. So rather than take that chance, it's a better idea if you're in a rural area to run it outdoors. Now, we city slickers who are on a city modern sewer system, of course, doesn't matter. You just dump it in the floor drain, and it's so diluted when it gets down to the city sewer plant, who cares? But at your house, if you're on a septic system, it's good to dump it outdoors. And what many people do is to dig some kind of a pit, like a sump, if you will, or a small shallow well full of rocks and gravel and sand, 2 or 3 feet deep, and run the hose into it and let the stuff percolate back into the ground. It's salty water. You don't want to get it anywhere near your well, of course, or any plants or bushes or trees that would be affected by the salt, but just pick a spot that's kind of isolated out in the yard, dig a 2 or 3 foot hole, and put some rocks and gravel in there, and run your hose from your discharge line from the water softener in the what we would now call a brine pit, and it'll be just fine to keep it out of the septic system. Finally, when we do the ion exchange, we end up with extra sodium in the water, and if that's a problem for you, if you have blood pressure issues, you might not want any extra salt. You want to perhaps get an RO system, reverse osmosis system, in the cold water line under your kitchen sink. Now, you don't have to soften the hot and cold water in your house. Some people start with the hot only, and that's fine if it works for you. If your water's super hard, you might want to soften the hot and cold water. The downside of that, of course, is you're using softened water in your toilets, which kind of wastes water and wastes softened water, and there's nothing much you can do about that. So start with the hot water, but if you're forced to do the cold water too, you want to put a reverse osmosis system. It's a little series of hoses and two or three tanks that go under your kitchen sink. It's easy to install yourself, and that'll get the extra sodium out for your drinking water, because if you have high blood pressure, you don't want extra sodium if you can help it. So there are some ideas on water softeners. But Susan, our initial emailer here, forget the so-called descalers that are non-chemical. They just really don't work. So there you go. That's a treatise, if you will, on water softeners. We have time for a break. It's 17 minutes after the hour. We'll be back with your phone calls and some email on Around the House right after this. Stick around. Well, in spite of the snow, we know summer is on the way. And if you don't like hot, sweltering summers in your house, you need central air. And now's the time to get it done, because there's a limited supply of these 13 SEER air conditioning compressors. The government has proposed new regulations they've kicked in this year. So when these are gone, they're gone. You'll be paying $1,000 more for central air. So I want you to call Click Heating and Air, 719-782-5425. And get in the queue to get central air at your house. Once these older 13 SEERs are gone, and by the way, they're great for our climate. They've been fine. They're just what you need at your house. The new government proposed products are, they claim, more efficient, but they're a lot more expensive. And since we don't cool all that much here, this is just a ticket. So call Click. Ask about the 13 SEER air conditioners. Get one reserved for yourself. Life's too short not to have central air. Call Click Heating and Air at 719-782-5425. Let me do that again, 782-5425.
From your roof to your foundation and everywhere in between, Ken Moon has solutions around the house. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
Welcome back to the program. Good to have you with us. Don't forget the podcasts are available. Of going back to last, the 1st of July, when we started our Colorado Springs-based KRDO program here. And Chris will have the podcast from today up in a couple hours, right? After you get off the air? Yep. And we go back to, am I right about that? First week in July, right?
Yes.
Okay, very good. So, coming into a touchdown for a year here almost, Chris. But if you want to see the... download the podcast, you can go to my site, aroundthehouse.com, or the krdo.com/radio site. And we get a lot of usage of the Around the House podcast, which I'm very grateful for. We're in the top 4 or 5 every month, huh?
Always a fan favorite.
I love it. Thank you. Anyway, what do we got here? Brian says, what do you think of tankless water heaters? Do you like the idea or not? I've never been a fan of tankless water heaters per se, of just going out and buying one. Now, if you're getting a new home where you can amortize the cost of the tankless water heater into a 30-year mortgage, well, you know, that's a different story. There are a lot of builders up in the Denver metro area who put tankless water heaters in their houses. But for us regular folks with older homes, it's hard to justify it, because you're going to have 3,000 plus in a tankless water heater, maybe even $3,500. And that's a lot of money when you can get a regular water heater for a third of that, give or take, you know, $1,200, $1,500, $1,600 if you shop around. I mean, if you look in Lowe's, you can buy a regular tank water heater in a cardboard box for about $500 or $600. So you get the idea. Tankless are very expensive. And the thing about spending money to save energy, and the idea, of course, with a tankless water heater is you're not heating 24/7 water. You just heat water when you need it. The idea, the theory is good. The problem is, until you amortize the extra cost, you're not saving anything. So a lot of times with what happens with tankless water heaters is you put it in, you spend the money, and then a future buyer tends to get the benefit from it because you spent all that money. So I'm not a big fan of tankless water heaters. They're a good idea in theory, but when it comes to writing a check, I think a regular tank water heater is a pretty good idea. It'll take 10 years, 15 years maybe to pay for a tankless water heater when you can get a regular one. Now, there are new energy rules with regular water heaters. They're required to be much more energy efficient than they used to be, so they don't leak as much heat. So all in all, I'm not a big fan of tankless water heaters per se, so I would not do that, Brian. I would just get a regular tank water heater. We have a call. Okay, we got Stephen. Stephen wants to talk about his door, so let's get him on the air. Stephen, you're on the air. Hi. Good morning. Good afternoon.
Dan, how are you? Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay, so I have a couple of questions. First one pertains to my sliding glass door, and I guess over the course of the winter, it's become increasingly difficult to slide it open, and it kind of tilts to one side when you pull on the handle to slide it across, and there's just a great deal of resistance. And I know that the track is exposed on one side, but I'm figuring that there's probably something underneath, maybe, and I'm not sure how to go about addressing the problem. Wondered if you had any advice.
Yeah, I do. The clue there was when you grab the handle, it tips to one side, which means the wheels aren't properly adjusted because they need to be even so that the door slides properly. So what's happened was either a wheel has broken, Stephen, or it just needs to be adjusted. You ever adjusted a patio door before?
I think it's just a screwdriver, right?
Right. Should be four on each corner of the patio door. There should be a little plastic cap you pop off there with a putty knife or something, and there's a big Phillips screw in there that when you turn it to the right clockwise, it raises the door, which means it lowers the wheel, if you can picture that, and
right.
Vice versa. So I think what I would do is try to even up. If you I'd like you to look at what we call the reveal. What reveal is when you almost close the door, within a half inch or so of closing it, you can still see daylight. If that daylight gap is not perfectly plumb and even from top to bottom, that's called the reveal. And I'll bet in your case, maybe it's a little wider at the top and narrow at the bottom, if you see what I mean. So you want to use that as your benchmark to adjust those wheels. So I would, if you can see that the left-hand side is lower than the right, you want to raise that wheel and just sort of even everything out. And there are wheels in the top, two adjustments in the top, which you can also tweak a little bit just to get the whole thing even and give that a try. I think it'll straighten it right out. Now, if the wheels are broken, of course, you got to go get replacements, but I doubt that's the case. If it does actually roll, I think they're just out of adjustment. Of course, you want to get those tracks cleaned up. The winter tends to get crud in the tracks, and they just get dirty. You want to get all those clean and also put a little lubrication. Lubrication can take many forms. A little spray. I like Teflon spray lubricant on the track. You do the non-walking side only because you don't want to track it into the house. Any your favorite lubricant. Even put a little sewing machine oil on a rag and rub it on the track. Anything that you like in terms of lubrication. WD-40 I'm not a fan of, but it works okay. So clean, okay. Lubricate, adjust those wheels, and I think you're going to be fine. This is about a once-a-year thing on patio doors that you use a lot. So is that helpful for you?
It is. And then the second question that I had is this morning I was peeling off some of the caulk in our shower area.
Uh-huh.
And it looked like that there's mold, black pretty well along the entire length of what was underneath the existing caulk. So I'm guessing I need to clean that out. Is there a product that you recommend for addressing mold in the shower?
Yeah, there is. That's technically mildew, but it's the same family of what we call fungi. How about that for fungi among us? But no, if a shower that you guys use every day, every 6 months or give or take, it's just just develop this mildew stains under the caulking. So, yeah, remove it all, and there's that black stain there. And you can use about any, if you have a favorite spray, a bleach-containing spray product in the bathroom like Tilex or one of those, you could use that to kill the mold. First thing you want to do is kill it, kill the mildew. I correct myself. And then, or hydrogen peroxide works really well, but it's a little hard. You know, you could get hydrogen peroxide on a rag and rub it in there. It'll just kill all the mold spores, and then scrub it really well with some soap and water and a stiff brush, and get it all rinsed out. And then you got to give it, 12 hours or so to totally dry, and then put in some new caulking. Most of the modern caulking materials, like there's a brand called DAP, D-A-P. They have mildicides built into them to kind of slow down and diminish the mildew formation and actually kill it off in some case. But sooner or later, this is a common problem. So that's basically the scheme. You kill it and then rinse it and then re-caulk it with a good caulk, and you'll be fine for another 6 to 12 months or so.
All right, cool. Well, thank you very much.
You got it. Those are great questions. I appreciate your call, Stephen. 719-473-1240 is our telephone number. We'd love to hear from you today. And, of course, live email, aroundthehouse.com. Our guest is Terry Naber, a realtor, to talk about spiffing up your house. We'll do that at 2 o'clock. We'll be right back.
Need help with your next home project? Back to Around the House with Ken Moon. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
Welcome back to the program. 24 minutes before the hour. You know, I promoted on this show, we're going to talk about sprinkler systems, and we still can. As a matter of fact, I got back to town late on Thursday night. Actually, I flew over half the country trying to get home. I was supposed to go Hartford, Chicago, Denver. I went Hartford, Charlotte, Dallas, Denver, but I got home safe and sound. So I knew it had been warm, right, Chris? It was in the 80s on Tuesday?
Yeah, we got to near 80 on Tuesday.
Yeah, so I figured my lawn needed a drink of water, so of course I sprinkled yesterday, and of course here's the snow today. Go figure. But sprinkler systems, you know, this is the time of year to start thinking about firing them up. And, of course, the way sprinkler systems are, there's a lot of moving parts and not moving parts, but there's a lot of fittings and pipe and heads and zone valves and all the various parts in the sprinkler system. And expect, you know, every spring there's one or two heads you got to replace that got stomped on or something. Or full of dirt. You know, you get the idea. Put your shorts on and your old clogs and go out there and get her done when you need to. But a sprinkler system is a valuable thing to have this time of year, especially when you fertilize. You want to sprinkle right after you fertilize. So I'd go out and get some. My favorite is that Rich Lawn, the $12 stuff, the Rich Lawn Plus Iron, which I buy and have had really good luck with. And after this snow melts and it dries out a little bit, you don't want to tromp around in your lawn with a fertilizing spreader when it's super damp. But you know, this coming week I think I would fertilize and then water. Sprinkler systems, of course, need to be re-winterized, unwinterized, back and forth, pretty much from now until, I always tell people, Mother's Day. That's if people want to guarantee no freeze-ups, Mother's Day, which is the second weekend in May. So,
and then we have some snow in right after Mother's Day last year.
Yeah, we did. Well, we didn't. Yeah, as a matter of fact, was it 2019? We got that all the trees broke. Was that May 21st or something like that? Yeah. But generally, those aren't accompanied by hard freezes. But up until Mother's Day, I swear you can get hard freezes. So you want to re-winterize and unwinterize. That's why my sprinkler at home is I've designed it over the years, so just a couple of valves and one faucet and it drains, and then you can fill it back up again. But you want to make sure that you start watering as you need to, especially after you fertilize and or aerate. Aeration is a good idea this time of year. As a matter of fact, it's best to aerate when the lawn's a little damp, so if you can get it done this coming week, the lawn will be a little on the softer side because of the melting snow. So that's a good thing also. But sprinkler systems, you know, you I'm sure you have a clock at your house, and you want to kind of time the zones based on the season. When it's really cool like this, you don't need to water quite as long. But this is the time to start thinking about firing up the sprinkler system, but don't count on leaving it on perpetually until we get into that mid-May kind of idea. That's my rule of thumb. Mark says, I remove wallpaper from our dining room walls and then paint it, but I can still see glue lines. Is it too late to fix this? Maybe. I had a rule of thumb from the beginning of the show almost 30 years ago. Once my rule was, once wallpapered, always wallpapered, because once you wallpaper, it really is hard to get rid of all of the residue. Depends how long it's been on and how much paste they used and how aged it is. I think what's happened is that these lines where the wallpaper seams were have been locked in, maybe with you've repainted already. You could try to sand, Mark, but sanding sheetrock always turns out badly because you get, if you get just one application too far or push a little too hard, you get into the sheetrock paper and then you got a mess on your hands. And so if you're going to remove wallpaper, you want to get some of that enzyme wallpaper remover. You mix it with warm water and it actually eats away, the enzymes eat away at the wallpaper, the old glue residue, but sometimes it doesn't work all that well, and that's what you're learning here. So I got to tell you, if you've gone this far, you say you've removed the wallpaper and then painted, I think you've locked those seam lines in, and it's probably too late to get rid of them. So I guess what I'm saying is you might want to think about re-wallpapering, but use something that's pleasing. Nobody wants to see big old flowers or castles or angels or fairies flitting around in wallpaper like your grandmother had, right? All those flowery, almost garish wallpaper patterns from 50 or 60 years ago. But you could a wallpaper with a muted texture, like a light gray or tan or something that would look like a doctor's office kind of motif if you're sitting or an office building kind of thing. And you can decorate with paintings and all kinds of objects, dart, that you could put on the walls to add color. But that muted texture will blend in and look like, it won't really look like wallpaper. People will really not notice it after you put your doodads and furniture and paintings and photos back in place. So that might be the answer here instead of trying to sand. And you could always re-drywall, but that's such a hassle. I'd go with my once wallpapered, always wallpapered rule, unless you're very lucky. Sometimes the enzyme removers work well and sometimes they don't. Again, it depends on whether it was a foil or a grass cloth. Foil wallpapers are really tough to remove. Whether it was strippable wallpaper paste or conventional paste, you just don't know how old the wallpaper was. It's so funny. I just got back from my New England where I grew up, and a lot of those, when you drive around New England, it hit me for some reason or other this trip. A lot of the houses are just old homes, and because it's an old part of the country, and many of those are plaster, and wallpaper was one of the defensive ways we held those houses together to keep the plaster from falling. I remember houses with wallpaper on the ceiling to keep cracking plaster from crumbling and falling in your eyes and your hair and so on. So that was a way to hold houses together. It's not the case so much now, but wallpaper was a big deal decorating-wise back up until about the 80s, I guess. I remember starting to build homes in the 70s, and we'd do Parade of Homes houses, and a lot of those rooms would be wallpapered, and it was just something people did, especially grass cloth. That was really popular in the 70s and the 80s to decorate with and so on, but not so much anymore. I don't even see borders, you know. One of the cute ways to decorate like a little half bath, like a small room, is to put a border. You can put it around where the ceiling and the wall meet, or you can you could put a border at 32 inches or 36 inches off the floor, like a wainscot height, but nobody even does that anymore. So wallpapering has just lost its cachet, and that's a shame because you can really do a lot of decorating and make a decorating statement with wallpaper, and that may be the problem. People don't want to put themselves out there and use a wallpaper that others might not think is nice looking. So, you know, it just, things come and they go, and I suppose someday we'll be back to wallpapering, perhaps, like fashions change, I guess. Houses change also from a fashion standpoint. Let's see here. Deborah said, is it okay to cover a crawl space that has dirt on it, even if it has periods of dampness in the spring? Yeah, I think so, Deborah. My rule is damp is okay, wet is not, and it's hard to tell the difference. Dirt and crawl spaces will always feel cool because there's a natural moisture in it. And if you pick it up with your hand, it'll feel cold to the touch. And maybe you can make a ball out of it because there's a little moisture in it. And that's kind of normal. But if it's wet, and especially if there's standing water, any kind of water, you don't want to cover it up until it's gone. So damp crawl space dirt, which is sort of normal, you can cover with plastic. Wet, don't. You got to let your crawl space breathe a little bit. And that the spring and summer is when you have all that moisture that comes into a crawl space. So you're right. In the spring, you said it's damp. But if it's just damp and you can't, and it just feels like cool, damp earth, that's kind of normal. I'd go ahead and cover it with plastic because the plastic will help keep the dampness out of your house, the wood, the floor joists, and the flooring that you see at the ceiling of the crawl space. It'll keep the musty smell out of your basement area. So I think it's a good idea to cover a crawl space with plastic. 6 mil heavy duty plastic is the way to go. So yeah, go ahead and do that if it's just damp, but not if it's wet. If it's wet, you got to figure out where the water's coming from, dry it up, put some fans in there, get it evaporated, and if it goes away and stays away, then go ahead and cover your crawl space. 719-473-1240. We'd love to hear from you today. We're going to check in with us here on Around the House, and we'll be right back. Stick around. I don't have to tell you that lots of folks sell siding, windows, and doors. So how do you pick the right contractor anyway? Well, I want you to call Dutch's Home Improvement. I know you've heard of them because they've been around over 30 years. I'm impressed with Gary, the owner, his commitment to old-fashioned customer service. They carry the best brands of windows, doors, siding, patio covers, and they have the best installers in town because they can stand by their work. They've been doing it now for more than 30 years. They know all the good folks in town installer-wise. They're fully licensed and insured, of course. And you want to think windows summer and winter to save energy at your house. If you have ugly old steel, wood, or aluminum windows, you want to get rid of them and get some new energy-efficient vinyl windows from Dutch's Home Improvement. Save money in the winter on natural gas and electrical costs with your air conditioning in the summer. And get a facelift at the same time. New windows and siding will make your house seem like a new house. You'll love it. 719-392-1369. 392-1369 for Dutch's.
Things break around the house. That's why there's the Around the House program with Ken Moon. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
Welcome back. It's 10 minutes before the hour on the Around the House program. We're going to have an expert, a realtor, Terry Neighbor, a friend of mine who has some great tips about spiffing up your house, getting it ready to sell, or just getting it ready to look good. If you're going to stay there, you want to do a little redecorating. She's got some easy ways to get that done. In the meantime, Mike is on the line. Wants to talk about vacuums, I guess. Mike, you're on the air with Ken Moon Around the House. What's going on?
Well, I have a Dirt Devil vacuum.
Uh-huh.
And it has a canister. And inside, the filter is a cone-shaped pleated cardboard with thin aluminum outside, sort of a mesh, not tight, not small, but just looks more like design than anything.
Like a screen anyway. To hold it together kind of idea?
Maybe, although it doesn't look like it needs anything to hold it together. It's fit in two ends. The two ends are fitted into plastic, and then it's pleated, so it's hard to misshapen. But I went to the store to get a replacement for that, and for a simple piece of cardboard, they're charging $23.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I wanted to ask you if you have any ideas about how I could make something homemade or another alternative to avoid paying that outrageous price.
Yeah. Have you checked Amazon.com?
Yes.
What kind of price do they want?
Same thing.
$23? Huh.
Yeah. And the Walmart, same thing.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. How often? Let me ask you a couple questions, Mike. Is it cleanable? In other words, can you wash it, or how are you supposed to maintain it? Does it say?
No, I already recycled it, but it's only one use.
Single use. Okay. Yeah. And how often do they want it changed?
Well, I don't know. I haven't had the vacuum that long, and it was a used vacuum when I got it. Uh-huh. So. I probably used it for a year before it got too clogged and dirty to keep using.
Is this the only filter in this vacuum? Is there another filter somewhere else, or is this it?
This is it. This is inside the canister.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, I have you gone to the Dirt Devil website and see what they recommend? Because I know that, for instance, I have a HEPA air filter in my bedroom, HEPA machine that a Honeywell, and that filter in there, I brush it. I have a shop vac. I suck it out and brush it off with a stiff broom, kind of or handheld, like a whisk broom kind of thing, and then put it back. I'm wondering if you could do the same thing with this. Do you need a new one? You throw the old one away already?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you may be stuck with that $23, but once you get a new one, I would not be anxious to throw it away. I would probably use another vacuum, like a shop vac, every few months, whatever they recommend, and just suck the dirt off of the capture side of that filter, brush it a little bit, maybe a little compressed air even. I suspect they say single use, but I'll bet you can clean that and probably get more than a single use out of it by just cleaning it up a little bit, because we're just talking about dry dust here. We're not talking about anything that's wet or would have a lot of mold type characteristics or anything. So I would try to clean it. There's other, have you gone to some of the other websites, there's one called that I've used before. I think it's called easyapplianceparts.com. There's many sites that you can get appliance parts in, and I would just look at some of those sites also. But it's interesting that a retailer and Amazon would have the same price. I find that interesting.
I threw the filter away before I found out that it was going to cost that much.
Yeah,
to replace it.
Yeah. Well, I guess you're stuck with that. I don't know any, but I would not run out. Once you get another one, I would hang on to it like dear life and just keep it cleaned and blown out and brushed off, because it doesn't sound did you decide to change it because it kind of broke down? What made you decide to get a new one?
Because it was so clogged up and filthy.
Yeah.
It just, and it said single use, so yeah. I assumed that the water would just damage it.
Well, I would not use water, but I would do compressed air and a brush and a shop vac and do it that way. You know, I wish I had a better answer for you. Let me do, I don't mind doing a little research for you. And if you want to send me an email with the model number, I can look around also for you if you want. And you can go to my website, aroundthehouse.com, and send me an email, and I'll help do a little research for you. I don't mind doing that at all.
And what was the website you said?
Aroundthehouse.com?
No, before that, for Easy...
EasyApplianceParts.com, I think, is the one.
Okay.
Can you find that, Chris? I think that's the one. I ordered, dishwasher, things that you wouldn't find retail locally, I needed a new pump for my dishwasher, that kind of thing.
Just like it sounds, EasyApplianceParts.com.
Okay. EasyApplianceParts, plural, parts.com, yeah. You might check that out. Right. It's a cool website because you just put the model number of what you have in and it just pops right up. Yeah.
All right. Thanks a lot.
You got it. Good to hear from you, Mike. Thanks for calling. Yeah, I have a vacuum cleaner at home that that has a foam filter in it. So you just, you know, every few months just put it under a little warm water, a little soap, and let it dry, and it's not single-use. Single-use stuff, you know, that's one of the reasons, by the way, I don't like the so-called washable or reusable furnace filters, and they're very expensive. They can be $70, $80 a piece, and they're fine for the first few times, but once you never totally get rid of all the dog hair and the bacteria and mold spores and everything. So throwing your furnace filter and your dirt away is a good idea, except in the case with Mike, $23. But I think that's cleanable. I would use some. I have a little air compressor in my workshop. Blow that thing out and brush it off and try to use it more than once, even though it says single use. So that would be my best advice. This is the end of the first hour of the program. Starting the next hour, I've got a friend of mine who's a realtor who's found some really neat ways to, little shortcuts, if you will, without having to hire a bunch of people to redecorate and clean up a house and make it look less tired, more sparkly, especially if you're going to put it on the market. So we'll talk about that kind of thing after at 2:06 after the news. 719-473-1240 is our contact line, and we have the live email today at aroundthehouse.com, and we'll see you right after the news at 2:06. Stick around. Part two of Around the House right around the corner. Welcome back to the program. It's 6 minutes after the hour. This is the Around the House program. We're glad you are with us here, hour number two, and we hope you're enjoying your weekend. Thanks for sharing your weekend with us. Our phone number is 473-1240. That's 719. What? 10-digit dialing is irritating, right? When you're a talk show host, it doubles up your speeches with your phone calls, but I got to say it, 719-473-1240, because everybody's got a foreign area code now on their cell phones, right? But we'd love it if you'd check in with us. I have friends who say, you know, you got to repeat the number more often. You have to enunciate and slow down and so on. So I did it just then, and I'll do it again. So anyway, yeah, 71, here we go, slow, 719-473-1240 is our contact line, and aroundthehouse.com is our number, or our actually website for live email. We have a guest on the line, but Terry Neighbor is a realtor friend of mine. Terry, before we get to your topics, I don't want to give you a short time, or have a call. Take real quick here. Steve is a kind of a regular caller to the program. Steve, you're on the air. Hi, what's going on, buddy?
Commander Ken, Private Steve, how are you?
Good, dear. What's up with you?
Well, quick question. That wasn't you on the evening news out there in Mass on the beach with your toes in the sand and a margarita in your hand, was it?
No, not at all. No, I had, instead of margarita, I would have had a bucket of fried clams.
There you go. Hey, anyway, a couple things. I've got the trolley doing 12 roof evals, and the question on the abode, the homestead, I know my better half doesn't think I noticed anything, but the downspout drainage on the garage is only like 18, 20 feet. I noticed a whole bunch of granules coming out at the bottom after this little snowmelt thing.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a little concerned because we used to have those malarkey shingles, which are supposedly 50-year, price 30% more than everybody else. And when I was cleaning the gutters, an entire 3-pound coffee can full of granules in that one stretch of gutter.
Well,
so should I be concerned?
No, I don't think so. Shedding granules, sloughing off is normal for most roofs. It's just part of the aging process, especially the hot sun, you know, will soften up the substrate a little bit. So it's kind of normal. What we don't want to see are bare spots, of course, and you might want to take a look. But no, a granule of, that's how we tell if we've had bad hailstorms or whatever, because it is, they're, you know, the gutters are full of granules. But a little sloughing is very normal. I would not worry about it. You might want to peek up there, make sure there's no bare spots, but a roof, as it ages, it just sheds it like you and I shed skin cells, that kind of idea. So no problem.
Swim by 4 or 5 and got your great sponsor quick doing 3 HVAC deals. And
yeah.
Then the last question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Is we got two city contractors. One doing the 2C chop up sidewalks, curb and gutter. Another one doing the computerized digging, drilling, and destroying for this new outfit Metronet just putting in a fiber all over.
Right, right.
Anyway, I went through like 50 hours of time. I'll never get back this week in trying to get these goobers to fix what they destroyed, which is sprinkler lines, power lines, 600-volt power lines. It just didn't need to happen.
Well,
and I should have to go back to corporate.
No, I've had these calls before, and my standard answer goes like this. We just had a city council election, and this is the very reason the city council people run for office, to solve constituent issues like this. So I would find out who the city council person is in your district, and I would send them an email, probably not a phone call, but an email, and this is what they ran for, and this is what they get paid for, and a little political pressure from the top, Steve, would be just the ticket. You got to give them time. If 30 days go by and they have made no effort to do repairs, especially if we're coming into sprinkler season, I'd probably get the city council pushing from the top on down. Steve, I need to run. Thanks for your call. We've got a guest on the line. Terry Naber is a REMAX agent, but a friend of mine for many years. We won't say how many, but I've got Terry on the line because she and I were in a house together, two or three weeks ago, and I went back in to look at something else today, and she had done a miracle on the hardwood floor. The hardwood floors in this house, and Terry, do you agree? The house was a little tired, had some wear on the hardwood floors, and you came up with some really easy and slick, convenient and cheap ways to spiff up those hardwood floors. And just to parenthetically, you know, I've been doing this show for 30 years now, and I'm always just driven to make sure that people can do stuff themselves without having to hire work for these little decorating and remodeling kinds of things. But and first of all, welcome to the program, and take me through what you told me by a text message, how you got these kind of worn out hardwood floors looking really neat again.
Okay, Ken, thanks so much for having me. Yes, those floors were so bad, very much dog scratched, big dogs,
yeah,
with claws,
yeah.
A puppy, like sliding around the corner, taking all of the finish off. They also look like they had a rug on hardwood floors, which, incidentally, different types of rugs are not good for them. I know you know that.
Yeah, Ken. Yeah.
But it can do a lot of damage to hardwood, and my seller can't fix it up at this moment. So I asked his permission because I had developed a way of rejuvenating wood many, many years ago, starting with when I was trying to do household repairs and remodeling on the cheap because we just didn't have the money. We couldn't hire anybody, and so I've used it successfully over the years, refinished furniture, refinished a piano, refinished cabinets, but you don't have to go to the extent of refinishing just to make them look a lot better. So, this process is almost free. In fact, it was only my labor involved in this one because I already had stain that matched.
Well, take us through it. Now, basically, you know, listen, anybody can call a hardwood floor company and they come out with the sanders and the screen and the restaining and dust removal and all that. It gets quite expensive very quickly, but this is a kind of a, not just a, it's a shortcut, but an inexpensive shortcut, and it involves stuff you can buy over at Lowe's. Tell us what you used.
So there's I have this kit for touch-up on banged-up woodwork in my listings. And this one I had, just a little less, a half a pint little can. And let's see, Valspar, I think, makes the one that I use, but I've also used that other very popular brand that you told me.
The Minwax, yeah. Minwax is good.
The Minwax.
Yeah.
So it's a stain and polyurethane product. And before I did anything, I, of course, called my seller, and he wants to wait to refinish the floors. Incidentally, refinishing the floors would be on that house around the $7,000 range. And he insisted that we put it on the market, even looking like it did, which I know psychologically would impact the buyer's opinion of the entire quality of the house. Having been in real estate over 32 years, I've come to understand that you can tell a buyer that something's going to be done, but if they can't see it and they see these worn-out floors, it still has an emotional impact. That's why carpet allowances don't work well.
Yeah, and, so these are near the front door, and I think, you know, of course, yeah. Initial impression is like when you meet a new person. Same idea with a new house. Initial impressions, the floors are all scratched up is the first thing you see, and that doesn't set a good tone, does it?
No, and in fact, they weren't only scratched. They were pitted. It looked like the dogs had somehow chewed up some of the boards. And there was other woodwork in the house that had gotten quite dinged up, and it was, this home is priced over $1 million. It did not look like a $1 million house, and I needed to do everything that I could to up the buyer's first impression, even knowing that it was a temporary stopgap measure. So I went over there, and I got my little stain kit out, and I figured out the right color, and you have to be careful on a lot of different woods, like cherry and maple that are very, very fine grain woods, because the color difference is really going to show in those. They're pretty uniform.
Because the grain is so prominent, right?
Yeah, it's, well, in this case, it was red oak, and red oak does have a prominent grain, and every board can vary slightly in color and in grain. And so that's the perfect floor to do this on, because I didn't have the time or the energy, let me tell you, it takes a lot out of you, to do 1,300 square feet of floor. My goal was just get the worst areas so that they weren't so glaringly obvious, and the first impression would be a better impression. And they still knew that the floors were going to be refinished.
Well, and so
it wasn't
just
as if
basically
I was covering up a problem.
Basically, a rag
a rag. And what you have to do, Ken, as you probably know, when you are staining wood or refinishing it, you have to go along with the grain of the wood.
Right.
And
you can't go cross. You have to go not crossways for sure. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But especially if you're getting, you know, near to a stopping point, because the whole floor wasn't horrible, and I didn't want to do the whole floor. I knew I needed to have to stop at the end of a board. So you think where you're going to stop, because the floor isn't as worn over here as it is where in the high traffic areas, and be sure that you don't overlap into the next board. And the difference won't be as noticeable where you stopped and started. But I also knew that the polyurethane, the new stain with polyurethane in it, was going to have more of a gloss than the remaining gloss that was left on those old floors. So what I did to counteract that somewhat, help the textures, the gloss blend in with the older wood, after I got it all rubbed in, I actually continued rubbing, but I actually did it in a circular motion, but I ended with the grain-wise motion, so that it would be a lot less noticeable where I stopped and started, and the glosses would be closer to matching.
Well, I need to take a commercial break here, but when we come back, I'd like you had some great comments about what the human eye is drawn to and blending things in, and imperfections that you don't know. You may own the house and know where all the little imperfections are, but to the new set of eyes, things don't stand out if they even blend in a little bit. I thought those were great comments. This can work, of course, for kitchen cabinets and woodwork and even furniture. So let's kick that around when we come back from a break. It's almost 20 minutes after the hour. We're a little behind here. We'll be right back. 719-473-1240 is our phone number right here on Around the House, and we'll be right back.
Fix-It videos can be so confusing. Let Ken Moon walk you through it on Around the House. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
24 minutes after the hour, we're talking to Terry Neighbor, who's a REMAX agent in Colorado Springs, a friend of mine, and she's been doing it a while, and I've been home inspecting for a while. We kind of kicking things around about how to make your house a little more less tired looking, a little shinier. I wanted to continue because you sent me a text that I thought was worth discussing here a little bit about how the human eye sees imperfections, but when things blend in, like the surroundings, you're not trying to cover up or be phony about it, but it is a matter of things blending in. Go through that a little bit, more detail than I just did.
All right. No problem. There's a lot of psychology involved in buying and selling homes. People won't buy a house unless they feel good about it. It has to affect their heart. They have to feel good when they're walking through the house. And the human tendency is when there is a vacant house, like this one was, your eye will look for an imperfection. You look across and you see a big blank wall, and a smudge on that wall is just going to stand out as very obvious. And then you'll see one little imperfection, you start looking around for more. But what I've learned over the decades is that staging the home, and that means item placement, even furniture placement, can have a lot to do with the perception that a buyer may have when they come in your house, or you yourself, if you don't have your home on the market, aren't interested in selling it. You can make your home more appealing and warmer and calmer, more relaxing, just by a few simple tips.
Well, that's well put. We can do this with woodwork and trim and paneling and doors and cabinets and so on. Just that, but you got to look for the right material. This combination stain and finish. Minwax, I think, kind of pioneered that, and I've been recommending for a long time. And you kind of crystallized it for me. You don't need to call in the heavy bombers when you just want to do a little dabbing here and a little dabbing there. And it's worth, most of my audience, as of course you know, 99.9% of them aren't putting their house on the market right away, but they want to live there and make the house a little more sparkly. So let's talk about some other things. By the way, I'm a little sidebar here. We've gone through the stain and finish products like the Valspar and the Minwax. I had an email that came in this week, and I talked about last hour, about wallpaper. And wallpaper has sort of fallen out of favor. Talk to me a little bit about wallpaper. When you see it, do you have to remove it, or can it be too bold and garish? Is there wallpapering that you see that's done these days that fits in and blends in, or is wallpaper just a no-no in the world we live in right now?
Well, let's just say that dated wallpaper is absolutely a no-no. And wallpaper is one of those items that's so taste-specific. I had a seller who thought that he had the most beautiful wallpaper in the world. It was green Tuscan buildings.
Okay.
Well, it was not unattractive, but it was very 80s. And the problem was it was on three entire walls of a dining room that went up about 20 feet. And if you put up wallpaper, remember, someday you're going to be tired of it.
Yeah.
And someday it may get worn and damaged, and you're going to want to remove it. Well, I have done it. I have both put up wallpaper and removed it. If you don't put it up correctly, it can be a bear to remove. And if you, and in this case, the builder had put this wallpaper on the wall without priming it.
Oh, boy.
And that makes it bond permanently with the drywall.
The sheetrock, yeah. It just, it sticks to that paper finish. Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. So you have to be very discriminating about the wallpaper that you're putting up. You get tired of bright colors sooner than you will more subtle colors and patterns. So keep that in mind. Go with something that, you know, is more subtle, and go with something that's more maybe contemporary to today's taste. It will last longer. If you ever have to sell the house, just do one, just do an accent wall.
Right,
don't
just
do the
one
whole
wall.
Room.
I'm sorry we've lost. I used to see much more than I do now. Little half baths and small rooms like that, where they use a border, say around the ceiling wall line, or maybe at a wainscot height, just as a little accent kind of thing. And of course, borders, you can change it every you know, month or two if you want to, because they're not very expensive. But we've even lost that, I think. Terry, is it a matter of people are just afraid of any kind of wallpaper? They're afraid of making a mistake. Is that what's going on?
Well, I don't think so. I think, you know, with HGTV, which is one of my guilty pleasures, I still watch those.
yeah.
It's coming back in, but the more sleek lines are actually in vogue right now. It's kind of relaxing from that stark gray and white to where they're now bringing in more natural colors, like natural woods, to warm it up a bit.
Yeah.
And so, but they're looking at what you're seeing are patterns not too garish, you know, that have some staying power in their appeal. And they are doing the accent walls, not seeing borders anymore. But just know, I mean, your choice of tile, your choice of wallpaper in 10 or 20 years will be passé.
Well, and before it's passé in 20 years, I like your comment, and I guess I hadn't crystallized this in my head, that you yourself will get sick of it. And then what?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. Once my mother thought she loved the color red, so she bought a bright red, fire engine red couch and chair.
Okay.
She hated that after 2 months. So
okay.
it's just a, you know, psychology. You may love it in a dress. Well, you don't have to wear the dress every day, but you look at your couch every day.
And you lie on it and everything, sit on it. Yeah. What about accent wall painting? You know, you go into a bedroom, maybe the one wall, maybe behind the bed is a nice, tasteful, you know, sage green or gold or something like that. Are those still in now, or we don't do that anymore?
Right. They're still doing that. Again, remember this. When you see the little paint chip in the store, it's like an inch square. I suggest you go with a grayed down color no matter what color range you're going in, especially if you're doing exterior paint. And that's why just doing a wall is great, because it's not beyond the normal homeowner's abilities. They can see if they like it. But you can now buy the little sample of whatever color.
Right, a little tiny can,
Mm-hmm. So just know that whatever you're looking at, when you get it on a big object, it's going to appear much brighter to your human eye than the little chip that you get at the paint store. So I'd test it out no matter what you're doing.
Time for another break here. When we come back, I want to talk about paneling. I can hear you, feel you rolling your eyes already. And I want to talk about a few more tips that just are the regular homeowners that are listening who are not necessarily going to put their house on the market right away that might like these little shortcuts, because they make you feel better about your house if the house sparkles a little more, maybe a little less dated and a little less tired, as we say. So we'll talk about those after we take a break. You can ask Terry a question. Terry Neighbor, REMAX agent that's been around for a while, if you want to check in with her about these decorating and remodeling and redecorating kind of I guess I repeated myself there. Little questions if you have, 719-473-1240, and we'll talk paneling, and we'll talk about little tricks of the trade for homeowners right after this, right here on Around the House. I want to talk to you about Dutch's Home Improvement. You know, we're talking with Terry about tired houses. If the exterior of your house looks dated and tired, I want you to call Dutch's Home Improvement. You know, lots of companies sell siding, windows, and doors. But Dutch's, you've seen their name around town because they've been around more than 30 years. They have a commitment to good old-fashioned customer service and quality, and they have the best installers in town. Of course, they're fully licensed and insured, and I bet Gary, the owner, I love his commitment to customer service. You first start with the windows. You need energy-efficient windows at your house, not those old steel, wood, or aluminum windows from bygone decades. You can save money winter and summer with good new energy-efficient windows from Dutch's. Siding, of course, patio doors. They do it all. DutchesHomeImprovement.com or call them at 719-392-1369. If it's time for a facelift at your house and you want to save energy, summer and winter, call Dutch's, 719-392-1369.
Got a fix-it problem at your house? Ken Moon is here to help. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
Welcome back to the program. It's 22 minutes before the hour. 719-473-1240. We're talking with Terry Neighbor, who's a REMAX agent in Colorado Springs, about getting your house kind of spiffed up and sparkly. And if you're, whether you're going to put it on the market or not, some great tips she can share with us here and has been. Terry, old wood paneling, which was a big deal, you know, in the 70s and into the 80s. The answer is to, you know, move out of the house and never set foot in it again, or try to do something with wood paneling. When you have a house, a client that has it, what do you tell them? What's your approach?
Well, usually, you know, I find out what their budget is. But one of the least expensive things to do with wood paneling is to paint over it. And that really gives you a nice, what we call it, American farmhouse appeal to the room, which is pretty popular right now. That is, if you properly prepare it, and you would probably know more about that than I do, but there's some paneling that, you know, won't take paint permanently. But that's one thing to do.
Yeah, and I've also, when you have those, remember we used to do wall-to-wall fireplace fronts, dark brick in the 70s? You can also paint that brick, and I know people are saying, oh, man, but painted brick, if you use the right color, can look pretty nice, can't it?
Absolutely. I've done that in a fix and flip that I did. And you have to use the proper paint. It's not interior wall paint or exterior paint. There's a product that's specifically designed to go on masonry.
Masonry paint, yeah, you can. And Elastomeric paint is one version, a little more expensive. But yeah, it can really, because some of that brick was really dark. We seemed, and I started building, as you know, in the 70s, and it's like we set out to make houses as dark. We thought dark was cool and sophisticated, you know, dark kitchen cabinets, dark trim, dark doors. I don't know what we were thinking, but that's all gone, thankfully, right?
Right. But, you know, some wood is making a comeback. You see wood treatments on ceiling, tongue and groove, or they'll do faux beams, and that's the only wood tone is a beam or two, three, whatever, across the ceiling. You're seeing wood paneling done with painting. So you'll see wainscoting, but you'll see the paneling only go partway up the wall with a chair rail on it. And then different variations of panels and vertical members to what would be to add detail.
Yeah.
But that's more formal. If you like the more formal look, then that's still okay to do. You know, there are a lot of buyers right now, and I'm sure a lot of other listeners who are not selling who do prefer a traditional look. If you don't like what's in style, it is okay to go with your own taste.
Sure.
Because you're not doing this necessarily to sell. You're doing this to enjoy your home.
Now, what about acoustic sealing? You've probably heard, listened to the show. I'm pretty much against removing acoustic ceilings unless you really have to, because it's expensive and messy and time consuming. If an acoustic ceiling is painted with new, nice, brand new paint to get it kind of looking bright and clean, what do you tell your potential sellers about acoustic ceilings? Is it kind of a mixed bag?
Yeah, it really is a mixed bag. Sometimes those, well, I guess that's the way that you install them is you are dropping the ceiling. So it, usually where acoustic ceilings are, they're lower than what it would be had they hung drywall. So I did have a house that was listed around 830, and it was like a five-level house in the very lowest floor. They had the acoustic ceiling, so we did get a lot of feedback. I did sell it, but we got a lot of feedback that that ceiling was turning people off because it does look, it looks cheap.
How about popcorn?
But
how about popcorn?
Popcorn. Oh, people hate popcorn now.
I know.
And I've actually taken down popcorn ceilings, and you have to be careful because they can, as you know, can contain asbestos.
Right, right.
And so you maybe don't want to do that yourself unless you test it first. And but if it's never been painted, they're quite easy to remove. It's just tedious, and you wouldn't want to do a whole house full, so you might want to hire that. But, you know, it's by now all the acoustic ceilings have either been painted or they are just so, so dirty that they either need to be painted or removed.
Yeah, if a house is built before the, you know, we still had asbestos and drywall products up until the mid-70s or even a little later, maybe 77. And I've told people that if you have a house from the early 70s with acoustic, with popcorn ceilings, you might want to think about painting it because it'll brighten it up and less dingy, less dirty. But if there is asbestos in it, you can get in trouble by removing it. You can get asbestos then in the heating system and all over the house. You know, it could be worse, Terry. We used to, in the early 70s, as you know, we'd put sparklies in the acoustic in the popcorn ceilings.
When I was 16, I thought that was gorgeous.
Yeah, you looked like, you know, the gym looks lovely tonight. You know, you could put a spotlight in there and the ceiling sparkles. But no, it's funny how those trends have gone. But if there is acoustic, I tell people, try to leave it in place and cut and put new, nice, bright paint over it. It'll make it look a lot cleaner. And, you know, there's certain things that maybe the cure is worse than the disease. Anything else you can think of that for homeowner-type tips to do these quick and dirty things? That how about painting cabinet doors and painting, you know, like bedroom doors that are maybe dark now and need to be painted? I think you may have done that yourself. And that's not as hard as it sounds, is it?
Well, I have had some trouble with that lately because we put an addition on our house, which I designed and I did some of the work on.
Yeah.
And we hired a painter to paint the interior, but I thought, okay, I'm going to paint the trim and the doors.
Uh-huh.
Well, we had just the primed trim and doors. And, you know, primer paint isn't a stark white. It's kind of a yellowy, creamy color.
Yeah, off-white.
It's an off-white.
Yeah.
Right. And I bought painter with primer in it, thinking that was the best thing to use. No, it is not. I put 7 coats on that, Ken, and you could still see it. So the paint, you have to play with it. Make sure you talk to a paint expert. I finally did, down at Lowe's or Home Depot. They're helpful if you can find someone who knows what they're doing. And he told me that the paint, never use the paint with the primer. It's not as good as it's cracked up to be.
Yep, yep.
But he told me which brand to paint, and it wasn't necessarily the most expensive, the top-of-the-line paint, that actually covered the best. And when I listened to him, I had a lot better result. But, yes, painting old, tired woodwork, once in it, if it's past the point where, you know, staining it, covering up imperfections, restaining it, then by all means paint it. But on cabinets, painted cabinets, you should probably have done by a professional, because the worst result in the world is when you paint it and then pretty soon the paint starts peeling off, and then you have a real mess.
Well, that's with all paint jobs, of course, the secret is preparation. And I, you know, if you don't scuff sand and put a couple of coats of just real primer on, like Kills, and then paint, I agree with you that the paint primer combo is a little oversold, and I'm not sure it's the best answer in many cases. Well, this has been really fun, Terry. Thank you for joining us, and I'm sure I've learned some things, and I'm sure our audience has too, in terms of how to make your house a little more less tired, as I keep saying that, or a little more sparkly, or a redecorated house is, of course, seems much less dated. And whether you're going to put the house on the market or not, I really appreciate your feedback today. It's been great.
Oh, absolutely. I've been enjoying speaking with your audience and with you, Ken.
Well, you've been generous donating your time today. Give us you have a little website that people can go to if they want to follow up with you?
Yes, I have the website buysellcoloradosprings.com.
Very good. And that would get people in touch with you. Buysellcoloradosprings.com, right?
Mm-hmm, that's correct.
Terry, thanks a lot. You have a good weekend, and I appreciate your time today.
Thank you. You too, Ken.
Let's see. It's 12 minutes before the hour. We're a little behind. We'll take a quick break here. We'll be back with a couple more of this week's emails right after this, right here on Around the House. I want to talk to you about Click Heating and Air. You know, life's too short not to have central cooling, central AC at your house this and every summer from now on. And I want you to act now. You can save $1,000 because there's new federal regulations. They've kicked in 2023, which means air conditioners will have to be a little more energy efficient, you know, meet government standards, but they're going to be $1,000 more. Click has a limited supply of the 13 SEER air conditioning condensing units. And I want you to get yours. Get in the queue now by calling 719-782-5425 or go to clickheatingandair.com. They have a great interactive website with instant pricing. But it's time for AC at your house. You can save $1,000 if you call them right now. Once these limited supplies are gone, that's it. And you're going to pay a lot more to get central air at your house. Call them. Click Heating and Air, 719-782-5425 or clickheatingandair.com.
From your faucet to your furnace and everywhere in between, Ken Moon has solutions around the house. Give him a call now at 719-473-1240. That's 719-473-1240.
Welcome back to the program, 7 minutes before the hour. Thank you, Terry, neighbor, a friend of mine, for some of those tips about how to get your house a little less dated and a little more inviting and warm. You know, houses, just like people, they just age. And, you know, the thing is, if you live there, you're used to it, you see it every day, and you don't get those fresh eyes about maybe you need to repaint this room or re-grout the shower or get rid of the old wallpaper. Chris sent me a wallpaper with these palm fronds. It's the kind of wallpaper that when you turn the lights out, you can still see it. One of those. There is some old, ugly wallpaper out there. But your house can be dated. But little accents, and I think the message that Terry tried to convey to us, I think, Chris, was moderation. You know, a little accent paint, not the whole room, for instance. That kind of idea, and I think that's very wise. It's so funny. We were talking about the 70s and how dark. Back in the 50s, there was another trend of colored plumbing fixtures. So we ended up with salmon color, gray, this ugly green, even black plumbing fixtures and dark brown. It was chocolatey-looking plumbing fixtures. And that was the 70s, I guess, too. And actually going back to even the 60s, and that was another, you know, so we go from fad to fad to fad.
Sort of getting into the Technicolor era.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just like clothing, things change. Now we're into the HGTV grays and tans and so on. And, of course, that will change also. Here's an email from Janet. We bought an expensive new dishwasher because the old one was leaving a film on the dishes. Now this one does it too. I'm exasperated. Is there an easy answer to this? Well, water can be harder in the winter. And if your city, I don't know where you are, Janet, but certain cities get their water from the local river. I can think Casper, Wyoming does. I know for sure the Missouri River or small community systems. Water tends to be a little harder in the winter because of the supply availability. We get less rain, of course, less precipitation in the wintertime. You can buy a test kit at the hardware store, and 7 grains or more of hardness is considered hard water. So if you don't have a water softener, that can be a problem. So that's one thing. Check your water temperature. If it's about 120 degrees, raise it to 130, 140, provided there's no little kids in the house that could be, disabled people or little kids that could be scalded. So a little hotter water helps. Water softener, if you don't need a water softener, you may not be using enough soap. You can experiment a lot of variables with a dishwasher. The amount of soap, the water temperature are big ones, and of course the hardness of the water is a big deal. I like liquid versus powdered soap. I'm not a big fan of the dishwasher pods. They haven't worked well for me. They've done fine at your house. The dishwasher pod, I tried various brands. I tried the different high-end silver Cascade ones. What I found out with the pods is in the last rinse cycle, I spent a lot of soap suds in the bottom of my dishwasher, so they were over-soaping my dishwasher. So I went back to the Cascade liquid, the gel, not liquid, but it's a gel, out of the bottle, and that seems to be working well for me. So you need to experiment a little, get a little bit. P&G.com, the Procter & Gamble website, is a good resource also for your cloudy dishes. But water temperature, amount of soap, hardness of the water, those are all variables. And, of course, make sure your dishwasher arms are spinning. You know, you can line them up with the front of your dishwasher so they're at 90 degrees and then run it and then pop the door open, make sure that they're in a different position. Sometimes your arm is not spinning as much as you want it to or spinning at all. The upper arm in your dishwasher may not be spinning because it's not getting enough water. You got to be careful. In some designs of dishwashers, if you load the dishwasher wrong, you can cover up the opening of the upper arm, which gets a blast of water, maybe in your dishwasher, down through that upper part of the cabinet. And if you're blocking that with dishes, of course, your dishes aren't going to be as clean. So there's lots of variables, but you're going to have to do one variable at a time, Janet, to figure out what's going on. So that's it for the program. Thanks to Terry Neighbor, REMAX agent, being a guest with some decorating tips and remodeling tips for houses. And we appreciate her time today. Thank you for all the calls and email this week. Chris Moyer, thanks for your help in the control room. We appreciate it. And for all the help you do off when the show isn't on during the week, Chris, we thank you for your help. God bless. Have a wonderful week. See you next time right here on Around the House.